Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So tell me, Steve, if you were Suzuki, would you be happy you've won the championship or disappointed at how terrible you were in Portugal?
I'd be like Two-Face from the Joker. from the Batman movies. One side would be like... celebrating like crazy, and the other half would be looking at that last race going, what the hell happened here?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's how I feel about it. I don't know, because obviously over the season I'm like, oh, Suzuki, great, what a performance. Like, they've only been back in the class like what, 4 years, 5 years?
They came in 2016 15, I believe.
15. So 4 or 5 years. Some years. Four, five, 6 years, something like that.
Yeah.
We'll call it five. We'll stay. Take it down the middle. yeah, only been back then for a hypothetical 5 years and already managed to depose the giants.
They certainly have.
Crush their Japanese competition, smite their Italian competition into the dust, their... way ahead of the Austrians, who came in just a season later. And they've done it, and it's great. And yet, around Portimao, which we all expected to be a cracking track for them, they were nowhere.
No, just couldn't do anything. Didn't matter what session it was just all over the place.
It was certainly a strange one.
It was not good. And the whole time, I think I even texted you and I saw a few comments online. A lot of people saying it just doesn't feel or didn't feel like Mir was world champion.
Yeah, that's how it was. Weird, wasn't it? Because I think we'd sort of bigged it up a lot, the idea that we're going to get it to Portimao, it's going to be this great scrap in the end, and it's going to be amazing, four guys fighting for the title.
Yep.
And it sort of just petered out a little bit, and then even, like you say, even Mir sort of fizzled out at the end.
Yeah, it wasn't good, was it?
No.
2015.
Well, that's when Suzuki came in. So this was their sixth season.
Yes.
16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Yeah, their sixth season. Okay. I actually had to count that on my fingers there, which I did under the table so the camera couldn't see me. And then I remembered you're actually the only person that can see me anyway, Steve. So it didn't really matter whether the camera saw me or not.
Don't worry about it, mate. I can only count to 20 if I'm barefoot or wearing sandals.
Cool. Right. Well, before we go into any more tangents, let's dive into the show properly, shall we?
Let's go for it.
Okay, I'm Tim, he's Steve, and this is For the Love of MotoGP. So we're coming at you with our final round of the year at Portimao review show. Just to sum up what we've seen this year. We've seen Suzuki take the rider and team championships. We've seen Petronas Yamaha team come second in the Riders' Championship, win the independent team championship, very nearly win the team championship, and probably would have done if it hadn't been for a series of point reductions, point penalties for Yamaha's cheating scandal, which we've got into. And we've also seen Ducati win the Constructors' Championships, again, thanks to the Yamaha penalties, and also thanks to Jack Miller being able to score a solid second place in this final round.
Yeah, he did ride a good race.
Yeah, he did. So we get everything's wrapped up, all the championships are done, and I'm a bit lost now. I know last week we spoke, Steve, and I was saying how I was actually quite looking forward to there not being any racing. It's a chance to unwind, a chance to chill. Honestly, as soon as those MotoGP bikes crossed the finish line, I felt a bit emotional. And then as they were doing their goodbye Cal, goodbye Andrea, and like Rossi's going to a new squad and there's new people coming in and everything's moving and mixing up again, I got a bit, no, I didn't get choked up. I didn't have a cry about it, but I did feel a bit emotional. It all got to me a bit this year.
There was a lot of emotion on that TV screen Sunday. You know, there's a big change in the guard this year. We often talk about it, how all of a sudden riders, a few riders disappear. But this year we've seen a lot of changes.
Yeah.
A hell of a lot of changes, like backroom staff, mechanics go in. And there's a, and this is the first year I've really sort of kept an eye on social media while people are putting stuff up. So you're seeing comments from like the mechanics and other people involved. And it was just, that was quite a big show of emotion pouring out of all the pit boxes. And if the both Ducati guys, Cal, Jack, Rossi, the mechanics again. And it was just like, what the hell is going on? It's like, we're just signing off. We're never going to have a race again.
Yeah. And it is, isn't it? It's like a lot of people are moving teams or moving on. Yeah.
It's a big shift this year, a massive shift. I can't remember a year like it before. We just had such a change in the guard.
No, I can't at all. It's just occurred to me, actually, that there's not a single Ducati rider that is going to be on the same team next year.
No, they're all shifting around.
They are, yeah.
It's crazy. They've got the most bikes on the grid, and then none of them are staying where they're put.
Yeah.
It's like, what the hell? It's like, no, out with the old, in with the new. You're going there, you're going here. See ya.
Yeah, it's. I really enjoyed the scene as they all crossed the finish line when there was like Ducati with the thanks Danilo, thanks Andrea signs. And I could just imagine the two guys riding past me like, oh, fuck you lot. You're not really thanking us.
Yeah, this is for the cameras. Where's my suitcase? See ya.
Yeah, exactly.
I bet behind that ball, both of them had their suitcases parked there.
Ready
the minute the cameras got like, fuck you.
Yeah, they weren't even taking the bike back, mate. They were riding straight to the car park and off they go.
I did see a cracking picture, I think it was on Instagram, of the Suzuki boys had a bike in a lift.
Okay.
You obviously didn't see it.
No.
Someone put it up, and they had the three championship winning bikes somewhere, like in at Portimao, in the offices or press room. And to get it up there was literally two Suzuki guys and a MotoGP bike just upright on his back wheel in a lift.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I'm thinking, I hope you drained the oil out of that.
Yeah. You probably find it's not even a real bike. Yeah.
It's probably not. I know from experience, if I bring my bike in the house, it stinks.
Yeah. I've never been anywhere where I'm A, allowed to bring a bike into the house, or B, actually been able to.
I'm not allowed, but you know.
But it's better to ask forgiveness than permission.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Enzo loved it. He didn't get off of it. Just had to make sure it wasn't quite in front of the TV, but still in eye shot so I could just look at it.
Just look at it and drool, but so it's not blocking any of the important bit. Not blocking the TV, not blocking the kettle or the microwave.
No. Like, they were, for that few minutes before Sarah got back, it was like a proper bachelor's house. Living room with sofa, TV, a couple of mechanics books, and a bike.
Yeah, that's great. Next year, you end up with like a skateboard on the wall as well.
I'm really in the mood for a longboard.
I can see you riding around a lot, like barefoot as well, rolling around.
Yeah, you know me, I hardly ever wear shoes. I'm always barefoot. Literally drive barefoot, walk everywhere barefoot. Sainsbury's really don't like it if you go in there barefoot.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? I don't really understand why.
No, I don't get it. But there we go.
Yeah, it's what it is. Right, anyway, racing. What did you think of the race as a whole?
I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, it was a good one, right?
It really was good. I've been really looking forward to this, and it didn't disappoint. As soon as we got FP1, Moto3 bikes on Friday, I was just like, I want to see these dips. I want to see these undulations of the track. Because we'd seen like little snippets of the track with like super bikes and stuff on it. It's a different ball game with a MotoGP bike. And like the second you got a bike out, I was like, ooh.
Yeah, and I'm sort of the opinion as well that just the MotoGP kind of press package as a whole is better than the World Superbike ones. There's more cameras, better camera angles, more times in the helicopter. They've just got more money to throw at it.
Yeah, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. From the seconds we got coverage on the TV, timing screens, whatever, I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, it was a cracking one. Really, really good. It actually looked even better than I expected. I know a few weeks ago I spoke about Formula One just being around Portimao and how it looked amazing, some of the camera shots there. And like, it didn't show it in MotoGP because cameras were in different places. So I feel like I've got a really cool, like, by watching both quite intensely, could just got to see slightly different angles from the track and stuff, which was pretty good. But with Formula One, they showed the start-finish straight. And it was a camera shot from the end, so like from turn one, looking straight down. And you'd see the cars round the final corner, disappear into the dip, come back up onto the top, and then disappear again into the braking zone. And that was really cool. And I really wanted to see that with MotoGP, but they didn't give us the same angle, sadly.
Yeah, don't it.
Yeah, next time you need to see what the Sky cameras were doing at Formula One and do that.
Yes, don't do your own thing. Copy that.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, I thought it was an absolutely fabulous weekend. One of the best we've had to sign off a season for a long time.
Yeah, especially considering like MotoGP was done. We already knew the champion, so it's not like we weren't getting that excitement that we really craved. And yet even the MotoGP race was still great.
Yeah,
and even absolutely. Though it was a runaway winner, he led every lap, pole position, won by nearly 4 seconds, third biggest winning margin of the year or something.
Something like that, yeah.
He just Lorenzo'd it. It should have been boring as fuck, but it just wasn't. It was still a really great race.
I found not even like watching the bikes. I was watching where the bikes were on the track. And because every corner, like the first corner, just always looked, every bike looked like it was going to fall.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just watching it think, don't go down, don't go down. And it was like that through like the dips. I forget what it was, it turn eight, where all of a sudden they flip-flop left, right to left, and it's like down the hill. I was like, oh, don't go, don't go, don't go.
Yeah, there's so many places where it just looks like they could just go.
Yeah, I just spent the entire race just like staring at the telly. You know, Enzo's tugging at the trouser leg. Hungry, Daddy? No. Didn't do that, really.
You're better than me, I would have done.
Bless him. I made sure there was plenty of food scattered around the house before the race started.
You'd already hidden all that, yeah.
Honestly, mate, there was like a buffet on the sofa. I was like, help yourself.
Oh, that's great. There is talk, isn't there, next year of, and I have written in the notes here, let's not talk about next year's calendar because it's all up in the air. But it all of a sudden seems relevant to talk about it. So I'm going to. So, you know, I've made the rules and now I'm going to break them, but that's my prerogative.
Yeah, let's do it.
But there is talk of Portimao being early next year and actually coming back because the next year's calendar, which was released maybe a week ago, if that, has already got a lot of question marks over it, over the early rounds, so the Argentina, the US rounds.
There's been no actual revisions yet, as they're just like a lot of people are saying, well, we don't know what's going on with COVID.
Exactly. And they say, apparently they've said they're not just going to do one of those rounds. If one of them gets cancelled, they will cancel both because it's just not feasible to fly everything, all the teams, all the equipment over to the Americas for one round.
No, absolutely not.
So yeah, Portimao might be taking the place of one of those early in the season.
That'd be good. I'd love to keep this track on the calendar.
Yeah, me too. It would be great. And it would be really nice to see like fans there maybe.
Yeah, because apparently, did you hear Oliveira had like a motorcycle escort into the track one day?
Yeah, so apparently this was an accident.
Really?
Yeah. So I was listening to Simon Patterson's podcast, The Race, and he was saying on that that Oliveira was like had left home and was just driving to the track, and as he drove past a petrol station, a load of bikers saw him and just came out and pulled behind him and kept driving, and like along the way they must have just let the mates know, and just this convoy just appeared.
Awesome.
Yeah. So he had like 100, 150 bikes just convoying him in.
Nice.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
I did the region good as well. It's a very popular place, that region in Portugal. You know, like you say, big for bikers. I think there are even a few mainstream sort of like biking holiday sites where you can actually go ride through like the Algarve. And
it doesn't surprise me because it's just ideal, isn't it? Like, what better weather to be riding in than anywhere like the southern Iberian Peninsula, like say anywhere in southern Spain or Portugal? Like, it's ideal. It's probably a bit too hot actually in the summer.
I'd
but
say
ideal
so.
Now.
Definitely sort of jeans and t-shirt riding weather. But I go back there all day long. I'd like to say, we both agreed, drop a Spanish round. take it to Portugal.
Yeah, and actually, I don't think that would be a bad thing at all. Because no. you're still close enough that your Spanish fans can still get across. It's not exactly. like, and it's Europe, so it's not like there's a real border in the way. You can just walk across it.
No, exactly. I think it is. I think Valencia to Portimao was something in the region of like 800 or 900 kilometers. So it's still a good trek, but it's only the country next door.
Yeah, exactly. And the road networks are great. So like, yeah. I'd comfortably drive. You say 800 to 900 kilometers, so like 500 miles. Like I'm gonna. Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm more than 500 miles from here to home, and I do that in one shot every time I do it. Yeah. And the roads are shit, so it would be really easy to do it on really good UK roads. And stuff. Yeah, well, to be fair, the roads are fine in most of the UK. They're shit as we leave Norfolk, and then you get out of Norfolk, and the roads are good, and then get past Glasgow, and the roads start getting a bit shit again. And then as you get more and more into the Highlands, it's just game over. And then get onto the Isle of Skye. Oh, fuck.
The roads in Norfolk are fine. It's just they're not built for modern-day vehicles.
They're just a bit slow, aren't they? You get stuck behind people all the time. Anyway, let's not rant about the roads in Norfolk.
Ain't nothing wrong with them roads around here.
Oh, God, here we go. So, shall we dive into race review, Steve?
I've got a question about that as well.
Oh, go on.
What is this manufacturer first on the list?
I know. And I felt that as I was putting the list of manufacturers together, it occurred to me that we're not going to talk about Aprilia until after the break, Steve.
I know. All of a sudden, I looked at this and I thought, no, he's fucked it. What's he done? And then I realised you hadn't. And I was like, no, I completely agree.
Yeah, it was the hard thing because actually I struggled with where to put like Yamaha and Ducati because... they both have pretty shit weekends, except for one rider.
Yeah, actually, saying that, I'll be back in a sec. I've got something for this. Hold up. Right, I'm back.
Back in the room.
Back in the room. Are you ready? Hang on.
I'm pretty intrigued, to be honest.
Well, I thought of something just then. I said we'd celebrate when Aprilia went first on the list. Party popper. Ready? Yay!
Oh, that might be my favourite thing. Oh, that was great. I really enjoy how feeble a party popper that was too, because it didn't even just poof, expand as it should. It just
the
came out as
spring thing. It's still one big lump.
Just a lump.
Hang on, I'll get a picture of it.
Oh, well, that was great. I enjoyed that. So we got. Did
just suddenly occurred to me. Oh, if I put that there, everyone sees what's in my house. There you go. See a police car.
So there we go. That's us celebrating that Aprilia are not the first manufacturer we're going to talk about this week.
Oh, I was really happy when I saw that. I was like, they're not there.
No. And the ones that are there, in fact, and this might draw some controversy from some people. I say controversy. I don't think anyone actually gives a shit about what I think about the manufacturers and how good they were over the weekend. But I guess this could be a quote-unquote controversial pick. And it is Suzuki, I think, were my worst team of the weekend.
I think you're right, though. They had a torrid time this weekend.
Mm.
They really, really did. You know, Mir, what did he do? Qualified 20th. Where did Rins qualify? 10th.
Yeah, so not the worst qualifying from Rins, to be fair.
No, but in terms of your new world champion.
Yeah, in 20th there, not so good.
No, I know this is the first time we've been at the track and the first time a lot of riders have ridden around there. But even still, that's not where you want to be when you've just won a world championship and you want to stamp your authority on things.
No, exactly. It's a good job he did win it last week.
Yeah, just a bit, because he wouldn't have done it this week.
No.
In 20 of this, nil poir, you know, that would have handed it to Morbidelli.
Pretty well. I mean, it would depend what his lead coming in was, but yeah, it would have been... certainly. Where did Morbidelli finish? Second, didn't he? Yeah. No, third he finished.
Who was second in the championship?
Morbidelli is second in the championship.
Yeah.
So he finished third in this race for 16 points. So
that was still enough to hand in the title then. He won 14 points.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right. It would have been.
So Petronas would have had a good day.
Oh, God. Can you imagine if that had occurred? But, I mean, it didn't, so let's not worry about it too much.
But still, an awful, awful weekend.
Mm.
Good championship over the course of the season, but if it all boils down to one weekend, that's not where you want to be.
No, not at all. So apparently, Mir had an electronics issue in qualifying and during free practice, which didn't help. And then during the race, because he didn't actually finish the race at all,
no.
He had the same electronics issue. It just seemed to be fucking about with his traction control, and left him just slipping about and just spinning up the rear wheel and almost crashing all over the place.
Yeah, not good. So for safety first, he did the right thing.
Yeah, he certainly did. And Alex Rins apparently just put the wrong tyre in. So although he started in 10th, finished the race in 15th for a single point.
Yes, not good.
No, not good at all. Rins does seem to run very hot and cold, doesn't he? He goes on streaks. He's a very streaky rider. He'll go on streaks where he'll score a load of podiums, score a load of points. We'll all start talking about him as a dark horse for the championship, and then he'll just disappear.
Suddenly
again.
Gone. Yeah, just sort of miss into the night. It's like, woof, gone.
And it was the same throughout all his career, because I remember him doing it in Moto3 the year Alex Marquez won.
Yeah.
Arguably, Rins should have won that year. The year Zarco won his second title in Moto2, Zarco went off the boil for half the season.
Yeah.
And Rins should have been able to capitalise, but Rins also went off the boil. So this isn't new behaviour. It seems to be quite common. He's quite a streaky rider.
Yeah. Hopefully something he can get over. But you've got to argue, if he's been, it is like a common thing throughout his career, then maybe not. Maybe this could just be Rins as we know him. And the only thing he could do is work on it.
Yeah, roll with it and just hope he gets a long streak of wins when all of his competitors aren't.
Yeah, don't win three, win four.
Yeah.
There we go, yeah. Hard, hard weekend.
Yeah, a rough weekend for the new champions. And like you say, if they wanted to be stamping their authority on this so they can come into next season, you know, and be like, yeah, we can hit a 1-2 in Qatar because we are Suzuki, we're number one. This was not a way to sign out the season for them.
No, no. Other people came away a lot happier this weekend.
Yeah, they did indeed.
Aye.
So, shall we move on to Ducati?
Let's go do Ducati.
Okay, so second on my list of people who have had bad weeks, I guess, would be Ducati.
Yes.
I get the feeling that every Ducati rider, outside of maybe Jack Miller and Zarco probably, are just pretty happy the season's done now.
I think so. Rabat may be a bit miffed, but at the same time, probably happy just to close that door now. Dovi and Petrucci, book a taxi, we're gone.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, none of the Ducati, well, aside from Miller. Miller had a great weekend. Miller
had a bloody awesome weekend.
Qualified in third and finished the race in second place. Awesome scrap with Morbidelli in the race. Getting his own back for last week at Valencia.
Yeah, that was a good ride. Very good ride. I like seeing him, and I like the thought of him being on the big red bike next week. Next year.
It's just something quite nice about seeing an Australian going to be back on the big red bike as well.
Yeah, that does get the blood tingling a little bit. Just think Ducati and a certain 27. You're like, oh, this is going to be good. Very, very good. Really, if he'd have had, I'd say, been outside the top five, chances are I would have been talking about these guys first.
I mean, I don't know. Suzuki were particularly bad.
They were pretty bad, but they don't have the amount of riders that Ducati do.
No, that's true. Because like we say, like Miller had a great weekend, but aside from Miller, Zarco was probably, well, Zarco qualified seventh, finished the race in 10th. Tito Rabat, who we've mentioned, has not got a ride next year. I imagine he's going to be stoked to be leaving because he qualified 21st, finished the race in 18th.
Yeah.
Petrucci, another guy who's going to be bloody just so happy to be getting out of there and onto his new ride. Qualified 18th, finished 16th. Brings us to, let's go Bagnaia quickly. There's a little bit to talk about with him. Bagnaia qualified 15th. Another shocker, man. Like, I don't know. He had that stint in the middle of the season.
That little run.
And that's, you could see, like, oh, Ducati have made a good choice signing him, actually. But since then...
Win it or bin it.
Well, it's not even that, is it? It's just, he just cannot... He gets no luck. When he does get the luck, he can't do anything with it.
No.
And he just... It's strange. It's strange. But he had this crash that he had with Mir in this race was weird.
Yeah, that was a very strange one, wasn't it?
Yeah, so Mir came up the inside of him. I think it was something to do with his traction control being a bit shit again. Yeah. Oh, no, it wasn't, was it? Mir thinks he broke his traction control because he had a couple of collisions in the opening laps.
Right.
Well, where was I reading this earlier? I can't remember now, but I was reading it somewhere. So, Mir thinks he, because the electronics were shit, he qualified badly. So then he had a cracking opening couple of laps, made up 8-10 places or whatever, but had a couple of collisions along the way with people, just rubbing his racing kind of collisions. Hmm. But he thinks that knocked something out of the traction control system, and that's what fucked his bike for the race. But yeah, he came up the inside of Bagnaia, came in too hot, and it looked like his left handlebar cracked Bagnaia in the right shoulder. And
yeah, I saw that.
The injury looked horrendous. Bagnaia's arm just dropped, and he couldn't do anything with it. It's like it had dislocated it. And then he pulls in, and you could see him like riding along and lifting his arm and couldn't do anything with it, kept dropping it again. And he looked in absolute agony when you saw shots of him in the back of the garage.
Yeah, he was in pain, bless him.
Yeah.
No luck. Absolutely no luck for Bagnaia.
No, none at all. I don't know. And I'm starting to think maybe the big red bike next year wasn't the best idea. I think it could be a quite a short contract with Ducati unless he can sort it out.
I don't know what to think. The optimist in me wants to say, right, he's going to get on it. He's just had bad luck this year, and it's going to be absolutely fine. And that winning streak, or that good streak he had at the start, middle of the season, we're just going to see that. He's just going to get to grips with the bike, and he's going to float into that. But then part of the realist is like, I don't know. I think this could be the way it goes for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
My only hope is he'll do a Morbidelli. Take his first year as a real sighting sort of year, get to grips with everything, work it out, and then come out big guns in the second year.
Yeah, well, I don't know. We sort of expected that to already happen, didn't we? And it did happen to an extent, I guess, because his actual first year of MotoGP was shit.
It was bad.
And this year was much better. Well, yeah. I say it was much better. It was much better in the middle of the season. I don't know if it was much better overall.
It's just that one big peak. It was like a steady curve up to the middle and then straight back down again.
Yeah.
With far more crashes on the way down.
Far more crashes on the way down. Yeah, it was really not a smooth run for him.
No, I mean, it's like coming up, big bill, big bill, big bill, big bill.
Yeah.
Gigi's going to have a heart attack.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting, I think, next year to see him on the red bike and see what he does. And unless he can improve, I can't see him lasting more than a year on that bike.
No, I can't see a contract extension getting thrown in there.
No.
But we'll see.
We will see. And while we talk about complicated contract situations, let's talk about Dovi. Dovi qualified 12th, finished the race in 6th.
Yeah.
Not bad. Isn't that fucking depressing for Dovi, though? That we're like, oh, that's not a bad race, really, Dovi. You qualified 12th, finished 6th. I know you finished 2nd in the World Championship for the last 3 years. But, you know, finishing 6th isn't bad. Like, it just shows how bad his season's been, doesn't it?
Yeah, that is not what you'll be hearing. When people are coming up to you going, 6? Yeah, great, great. You think it's 6?
Yeah.
You know, I've finished 2nd in the championship, I've pushed for the championship, and now all of a sudden you're telling me 6 is good.
Yeah, exactly. It's less than ideal. But it's certainly, there's an interesting situation of brewing there, which I'm going to try and keep an eye on.
Go on.
Okay. Dovi's legal action against Ducati. This is going to be a good one, I think. And it feels quite like something that would be on like Real Housewives. Like, it feels a bit Handbags at Dawn, but also like quite good fun, because I think Ducati have been dicks this year, and I'd just quite like to see them get it handed to them by one of the riders I think they've kind of screwed about a little bit.
I'd love to just... Again, I've said I'd love to be a fly on the wall in every garage, but I'd love throughout the season just to sit back and hear some of the things that have been said and just get the whole point of view. Because you are right. It does feel like Ducati need a bit of a slap.
Mm.
And I think this could be the course of action that leads to it.
Yeah, that's fair. So for anyone that doesn't know what's going on, Dovi is potentially suing Ducati for quite a big chunk of money. Ducati, when Yamaha had their points taken away from the teams and the manufacturers for the valves, the points weren't taken away from the riders. Now, apparently, there was an internal decision between each team not to appeal that and not to ask for the riders to have their points taken away. From Suzuki's point of view, they did it because they said if they wanted to win the championship, they wanted to legitimately win the championship. They didn't want an asterisk to be next to it, like, oh, you only won because asterisk number one, Marc Marquez wasn't here. Asterisk number two, because Yamaha had points taken away. They wanted to win legitimately, so they didn't push for it. Ducati also didn't appeal, and Dovizioso seems to be convinced that Ducati didn't appeal because if they had done, overall, he would have finished top three in the World Championship, which means Ducati would have owed him a hefty bonus payout.
Yes.
As it stands, with Yamaha riders keeping their points, Dovi didn't make it into the top three, and Ducati saved themselves millions.
Yeah.
So Dovi thinks that, seems to think there's a conspiracy going on, and he is out for, not blood, but out for, you know, a bit of Wonga.
A bit of dollar sign. I can't blame him, really. I think he could have a case.
I wouldn't put it past the Ducati, would you?
No, not at all. We know that they're good thinkers, and they will look at all angles. And, yeah, I wouldn't put it past them at all. If they think, right, you're off.
Yeah.
You're not going to win this championship. Why should we give you a bonus? Let's screw you over.
Yeah, exactly. Quite frankly, just do everything we can to not have to give you that bonus.
Yeah, and it seems like they've seen an opportunity to keep the wallets full and have gone, nah, mate, you stay where you are.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it looks like. Obviously, Dovi thinks the same, his manager thinks the same, and their legal representatives obviously think the same. So it's going to be an interesting one to see if we see it play out. I imagine all that's going to happen is it will get to a certain point, Ducati will give Dovi some money and be like, all right, fuck off. Just because they don't want it dragging on through the Italian press. And that'll be that. There'll be some NDAs signed and we'll never know anything more about it.
No. We'll probably never get the full story. You know, it's not obviously going to be a televised court thing, which would be fabulous. Then you would really get your Real Housewives.
Oh, that would be gold, mate. I'd be so stoked for that.
Yeah, obviously it wouldn't be scripted.
You saying Real Housewives is scripted?
No. That's what I'm saying. Any reality show is scripted.
About as scripted as wrestling or EastEnders.
I'm going to hold my hands up here. I stayed up to watch the Survivor Series Sunday night because I had the opportunity.
I don't even know what that is, so I assume it's wrestling and not EastEnders.
It was Undertaker's like last ever. He officially retired for the 170th time. So I thought, right, I'll stay up and watch it. And yeah, I was watching that and I haven't watched any of it for donkey's years. And I then remembered why I don't watch it. I sat there watching some of it and I was like, this is quite painful. Looks good, but it's painful.
Yeah.
So,
well, at least you enjoyed what you watched, though. That's the important thing.
Yeah, kind of. It was one of those things where it ended and I was like, oh, the boys have been waking up in like an hour and a half.
Oh, no. It was that late, was it?
It was that late. Yeah, it just started at midnight. I was like, yeah, I should go to bed.
Oh, dear, mate. I've not been awake past midnight for months.
We've been going to bed early. It's just like bros has been like, no, mate, 3 a.m. is the time to get up.
Yeah.
He's like, this is happening. This is on. Come on. Want a bowl? Let's go.
Right. Yamaha.
Yammies.
Yamaha, actually. So I've put them third on this list because I think they were pretty terrible. Outside of Morbidelli, they were pretty terrible. But I think, all things considered, when we look at Jerez, those 13 rounds ago, whatever it was now, and Yamaha blew up multiple engines per rider, we're all saying, oh, fuck, what are they going to do? Their engines are never going to last the season. They're going to get 3 rounds in and they're going to be taking penalties. Actually, that's not turned out to be the case. Yes, they cheated. We know that now. But Morbidelli's race engine ran more than twice as many miles as it's designed to go. I think they're designed to do 800 miles or something.
Yeah, I did see some numbers somewhere that I said, I think his final engine had done something like 1,750 race miles or something.
Yeah, and I think they're designed to do less than half that.
Hmm.
It actually blew me away how little they're designed to do as well.
It's not a lot. If you bought a car and they said, right, you could do 800 miles in this, then you got to buy a new one. I'd be like, what?
Yeah, exactly. And we're not talking about any car here. This is like a £1 million car.
Yeah. If you strolled up into the Lambo garage like Lorenzo does and was like, with your spangly jacket on, with your checkbook in your back pocket, and was like, right, I want that. And they're like, right, in 3 weeks, you got to buy a new one.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be like, well, you're having a laugh, mate.
No, yeah, I'd be like, no, I'm going around the corner. I'm going to find somewhere else. I've got a Dave's Autos. I'm going to go get me something different.
Exactly. I'm going to get like an old crappy Renault Clio or something that I can get like 1,500 miles out of.
I once had a car with 185,000 miles on it.
That's a pretty good effort.
That was a solid effort, mate. And there was nothing wrong with it.
Why did you get rid of it?
It did have a few things wrong with it. One being the sheer amount of rust.
Ah, that's, yeah. So the engine was sound. It's just a shame about all the bits that were keeping the engine in place.
Well, yeah. It was all right, as long as you didn't want to put your feet on the floor.
That's fine. You just Flintstones it.
Yeah, basically, that was it. The carpet was holding, like, just floating.
That's so good. To be fair, though, if you've got a car that's done 185,000 miles, you probably do want an alternative method of propulsion, just in case, and you have to put your feet on the floor.
Yeah, always handy, always handy. I'm going to take it for an MOT. The bloke was like, yeah, you've got to have 400 quid worth of welding doing. I was like, what? And I took it to a lad I know, and he's like, you do realise that your footwells in the back seats have no floor except carpet.
That's so good.
Really? And he showed me a picture. There's supposed to be like a little tiny, tiny bunghole in the back, and it was just this thing that you could fit a football through. Yeah, okay.
Whoops. I remember my old Ford Fiesta. That cost me 50 quid, I think I paid for that car.
Oh.
It was a fun little car. I quite enjoyed it. But that went in for an MOT. That was an £850 bill to get that fixed. So that was sad. I had to get rid of that. Anyway, Yamaha, these bikes will not do 185,000 miles.
That'd be awesome if they did.
And they will cost significantly more than £850 to get welded back together.
I wonder what £850 in the Yamaha garage will get you.
A few team t-shirts, maybe.
Might get a few spanners, you know?
A few spanners, yeah. Get yourself a Snap-on set or something.
I would assume so, yeah. Not a lot. Not a grand amount. But yeah, I was quite impressed with the numbers on these engines.
Yeah.
And I reckon the mechanics must have been in the back of the garage eating their fingernails down, just like, please don't blow. Please.
I bet they were sweating bullets, and I bet it was the same back in Japan as well. I bet everyone's watching this race being like, oh, come on, do not blow up now.
No, but how much would you not want to be the dude who went, right, these engines can only do, let's say, for instance, 800 race miles, and all of a sudden you've got one that's done double. You must be sat at the back going, guesswork.
Well, quite, and actually, I do wonder whether... Maybe we know Yamaha for years have not been able to produce the same horsepower as Honda or Ducati, even as KTM. Maybe this is part of the reason why.
Maybe they've
been so focused on making sure the engines can make the 800 miles, they've just not been turning them up. Now, maybe all of a sudden they're like, fuck, we've just run the engines for twice what we thought they could do.
Exactly. I'm glad you brought
turn them up. Yeah.
Yeah. Really great. I thought about this the other day. I was like, well, if that is the reason and you've been tuning them down because you think they can only do X amount, now turn the bastards up.
Yeah.
Give them the big one. And even if they then only last 800 miles, you've still then got your engine allocation, which you know can see you through to the end of the season.
Yeah, exactly.
Crank your power up and let's go. And then we will sort, well, that'll probably open up another can of worms. But at least you're going to solve one of the big, big issues that the Yamaha have had.
Mm.
And you know you're going to actually be a little more competitive down through the speed traps.
Yeah, that's it, and that's what the Yamaha needs. We know that's what it needs.
Yeah, you watch. They'll do that, and then it won't be able to go around a corner.
That would be so classic. That would be great.
Like about next year, yeah, we can't turn. Like, why are you stop starting? Well, we can't turn the bloody thing now.
Yeah, exactly. We just got to ride it like a Ducati now. We got to ride it like a V4 now for some reason.
Oh, that'd be hilarious. A whole. One problem solved, new problem begins. Mechanics will be in the back of the garage going, for fuck's
sake. Oh, we've not signed up for this. Bring Alex Briggs back.
Yeah. Mention that name.
So let's go then talking about Morbidelli, I guess, because he's the outlier in the Yamaha squad, isn't he? Qualified second, finished first. Great scrap with Jack Miller. Really, really good fight. Like we said, just like Valencia. I'm very much looking forward to next season because I think these two boys are going to be great next year.
I think they're going to have an awesome time. We know Miller's always up for a fight no matter where he is on the track. And Morbidelli's now proved he is as well.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be cracking, especially with Miller being on the factory Ducati. I think it's just going to be fabulous.
I think they're going to find themselves on the same bit of track quite a lot next year. And I think it's going to be quite fun to see.
Yes, I'm really looking forward to that little tussle.
Yeah. Big one. The rest of the Yamahas, though, are probably not looking forward to any sort of tussle for the next few months. I think they're all just wanting to go home.
I think they are.
Have a long bath, have a couple of bevs, and just chill for a little while.
Yeah, I think there'll be a lot of reflection going on this winter.
Yeah.
And maybe a lot of, I don't know. I think the only one, really, that might be hedging his bets on a little bit more success next year could be Rossi.
I think Rossi's certainly going to be optimistic for next year. I think he's going to be a bit sad at the moment because he's obviously said goodbye to a lot of his crew and a lot of his crew are retiring. But I think, yeah, he's certainly going to be looking forward to next year more than the other two boys are going to be.
Right. If form's anything to go by, with Morbidelli doing what he can, although he is on a 2019 machine.
And will be next year.
Yes. Yes, he will. You've got to start thinking Petronas is starting to look like the better option.
Yeah, so, it's strange, isn't it, that we're saying that, but I think convincingly Petronas is a better team than the factory Yamaha team.
I think the factory may have had so much pressure put on them to solve problems and get results, whereas it's not quite as expected in the factory.
I think you're right. I sort of think that Yamaha as a whole is just quite a... When there's pressure there... I think it's bad, and I don't think it works. We saw it with Quartararo last year. No pressure at all. Amazing. Put pressure on him this year, he crumbles. Mm. Last year, Morbidelli had pressure on him to be the number one rider, and he couldn't step up to that. This year, with no pressure, he's easily been the best Yamaha.
Yeah, absolutely. So that makes me wonder, you know, stepping down into that, or say down across into that Petronas team, is Rossi just going to relax that a little bit more and just sort of think, right, you know, we know this place is capable. Let's just have fun. Let's go out and do it.
Mm, it's going to be weird seeing a bike that's not a factory Yamaha with a number 46 on it.
It will be like the first time we stepped on the Ducati.
Yeah.
That was a very strange time, especially for someone who'd like been a massive fanboy for years and years and follows him off with the Honda, the Gulwars, Yamaha days, all of that. And then suddenly it seemed on Ducati, although it's supposed to be like the Italian marriage of greatness. Suddenly see him, because we're going to see some really odd colour mixes coming in next year. It's just going to be strange. It's going to be so weird to see. But at the same time, I'm quite looking forward to it, because I'm sure he's going to chuck his own little swing into things.
Oh, definitely. He definitely will. Because remember on the Ducati, Nicky Hayden was still running the classically like red Ducati.
Mm.
And Rossi had like bright colours everywhere. It was just very him, wasn't it? The whole bike.
Yeah. It was just like, here we go. His kind of fluorescent yellow. Whew.
Yeah.
Wow. That kind of thing. Jazz hands. That's what I was going for. Jazz hands.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah. Very sort of like, woo.
Yeah, it will be. But I think he's going to be quite relieved for the season to be over for now. A chance to reset. And I think all the Yamaha boys need a chance to reset.
I think nearly everyone is a chance to reset this year. It's been wild.
Yeah. We didn't actually mention their finishing positions, but Quartararo. So they qualified in quite different parts of the track, actually. Quartararo qualified 5th, Vinales in 8th, and Rossi in 17th. Yet for most of the race, the three of them were battling hard.
They were. They all had a little scrap going on.
Yeah.
And wherever they were, they didn't shy away from that scrap. They put all their effort into it.
They did. They finished 11th, 12th, and 14th in the end. So they weren't even fighting for good points, but they were still fighting. And it's Yamaha honours, though, isn't it?
It is. Yes. Yes. Very, very honourable team. And you have to do the best you can.
Yeah, that's it. And it is. And it goes into next year with Quartararo. He was the last Yamaha in this race. After all the fuss we'd made about him at the start of the season, he was the third Yamaha in the overall world standings. he's had a torrid time of it.
He had a torrid time.
And with Rossi finishing ahead of him in the race, but taking his seat next year, it's just this. I find the Yamaha situation fun. There's just so many mental games going on, and it's all over the place. And who really knows which of those riders deserves a factory bike next year? Because at the start of the year, we'd have been like, oh, Quartararo definitely deserves one. Don't know about the other one. And now it's got to the end of the year, and I'm like, well, Morbidelli definitely should have a factory ride, and I don't know who should be on the other one.
But at the same time, should Vignale's been there?
That's the thing. Should Vignale still be on there? I don't think he should be. I think Yamaha would have been better served by not signing Vignale's early and by signing Quartararo and Morbidelli.
I think with all the early signings we saw, Yamaha were a bit like, right, we need to snap one of these boys up here.
The early signings have really fucked over some of the teams this year.
They have. And I think with so much uncertainty sort of surrounding Mr. Rossi, they were like, well, we've got to do something. Quick, yeah. Sign him. And it was just simply a case of, right, do or die and try and save a rider that's already here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. And there was a lot of talk, wasn't there, of like Ducati courting Vinales and other teams. And there was still a fear of Suzuki poaching him back, maybe. So it sort of made sense in the moment, but in the long run, it was not a good idea.
No, I don't think so. I agree with you. I think they should have taken the time, maybe put an offer on the table, which they wanted to give, not what the rider wanted to hear, just to try and secure it. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
We will see what happens, and we will just hope that Yamaha can come out all guns blazing next year and put on a show. Right, shall we take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about our old favourites, Aprilia.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right, thank you for waiting with us there. And that was a really crap intro, so I'm going to start again.
Leave that one in. Outtake. We've got to do an outtake show at the end of the year.
Thanks for waiting, guys. Thanks for putting up with my terrible, terrible reintroduction. Oh, I can't even speak now. This has really screwed me. Reintroduction to the show. And let's talk about Aprilia, because
let's go for Aprilia.
That's what we do. We talk about Aprilia. No confirmed rider for next year. So we know that they were speaking to Lorenzo. That seems to be a no-go now. We know they were speaking to Cal Crutchlow. We know that's a no-go now. We know Dovi has said no. Aprilia had reached out to... what's the lad's name? Joe Roberts.
Yes.
I'm very thankful that that seems to not have happened.
Yes, there's pictures of him on the Italitrans Moto2 ride, which I think a lot of people are very thankful for.
Yeah. It seems silly to give up what is a championship winning bike in Moto2 to go to the arguably the worst bike on the MotoGP grid, especially when you haven't proven yourself as championship quality material yet. Like, the guy has got some pole positions. He won a race this year?
Don't believe so off the top of my head.
But he's been on the box, hasn't he? He's been on the podium. He's had some good results. He's certainly had a load of pole positions this year. He's had some really good races. But he's not proven himself to be a championship contender yet. And the worst thing I think he could have done for his career would be jump on the Aprilia and get Sam Lowe'd.
Exactly. I completely agree with you. Don't sign a MotoGP ride just because it's MotoGP.
Exactly.
You know, if you've got the... if I had the... I can't talk now either. It's spreading, mate.
It's caught us both now.
Yes, it's spread down to Norfolk. You know, if it was me presented with a situation and I'm thinking, right, I have got a real serious championship contending bike here in Moto2, I'd take it to get a championship trophy under my belt, get more experience, because that Triumph engine and whatever chassis is on now is so close to MotoGP bike with the terms of electronics. You know, get some experience, get more experience, and then we'll see what offers are on the plate. Because if you can rock up as Moto2 world champion, arguably, you're far more attractive to a manufacturer than just Moto2 rider.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you'd think that was the case, but look at the current year Moto2 world champion gone to arguably the weakest satellite team on the Moto2 grid. So
this is true. But then it's a way in.
Yeah, that's
it's
true.
It's rare an opportunity comes up where you're going to go straight to a factory.
Yeah, that's very, very true. Right. And you would also say that the Aventia Ducati squad are a much better squad than the Aprilia team.
Yes, yeah. The results certainly say that much.
Yeah, exactly. So Aprilia then are left with Bradley Smith and Lorenzo Savadori, who have both been their riders on the one bike this year.
Yes, training both of those guys.
Yeah, they've got them. They're going to run them both through pre-season testing, and they're going to make a decision as to which one they want.
Yeah, that's quite harsh.
Yeah, I think it's a dick move, personally. I think they just need to pick one and go with it, because I think by leading the other on... I mean, it's a bit like everything my mum always told me. It's never really okay to date two girls at the same time and decide which one while you're dating them. You've got to make your mind up beforehand, because otherwise you're a horrible person.
Yeah, I was told similar.
Not quite exactly the same.
No, I was just always literally told, one. Don't be an idiot. Literally like that. It wasn't put quite as politely to me. It was just like, no, one at a time.
Fair enough. Well, I mean, the message is the same. So, yeah. And I think someone needs to sit Aprilia down and tell them this.
One girl at a time, Aprilia. I mean...
One rider per bike at a time, Aprilia.
Yes, they don't have pillion seats.
No, exactly.
Unless you're Alex Rins, you can stand on the side of the road with your thumb out.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. And I was quite sad that no one stopped and picked him up, actually.
Well, Miller did earlier in the season, didn't he?
Oh, Miller's done it for everyone at some point. Miller is like the perennial taxi of MotoGP.
Yeah, viva Miller. But yeah, no one stopped. And you saw him. He was just like proper waving his hand. He's like, oh, fuck you lot.
Well, he was a terrible place, wasn't he? Because he was just down one of the dips. So they crest the dip to see him standing there with his thumb out. But they're already doing 150 miles an hour. Like,
yeah, I've been like, no chance, mate. I ain't stopping this.
Yeah, exactly. Not stopping this downhill.
What I was really hoping for was someone was going to go past and go, high five. Yeah.
Oh, can you imagine how much that would hurt?
None of them would do it.
No, absolutely. Definitely not. I remember once I was riding my Honda Crunchy through town, and one of my younger brothers was riding towards me on his little moped, and we high-fived just going down the road towards each other. Doesn't it? Oh my God, neither one of us were doing above 30, but oh, the sting. Like for hours, my hand hurt, yeah.
Well, what we got to think about as well is how much wrist arm pump surgery these guys had as well.
Yeah,
if they start high-fiving, their hands are going to fall off. You know, they're just going to be walking around with their hands and I'm just like, just go explain this one. What did you do? I high-fived.
Right, anyway, so Lorenzo Savadori qualified 19th. Didn't finish the race.
Nope.
Another crash. Has he finished a race this year?
One, hasn't he?
Did he finish the second Valencia round?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty sure he did.
Espargaro actually had a pretty good weekend, not great. Espargaro qualifying 14th, not very impressive, but did finish an 8th in the race.
He did look good in free practices, though. Every now and again, he popped right up to the top and was like, hello.
He does it, doesn't he? He tends to just be able to, like, they always say in commentary, bite the screen for a lap.
That's it. But everyone said, like, the Aprilia is good over one lap. You just can't sustain it over a race, which must be infuriating for the riders. If I knew I could, like you say, just literally bite the screen and nip my butt up and just go for it, I'd be like, why the hell can we not do this for a race, for half a race at least?
Yeah.
That'd be driving me mad, absolutely mental. When Alesh does get that thing hooked up, He does look so good.
He does look good. He always does. The talking about being able to qualify and then not be able to race so well reminds me, in Formula One, there was a thing called the Trulli train. There's a guy called Jarno Trulli who was famous for being really good at qualifying and be able to put his car up on the top two rows, but was pretty dire in races.
Not good.
So he would just get a train of drivers behind him, especially on a track where it was hard to pass. And he'd be slowing everyone down behind him by about a second a lap while the guys in front of him were just storming off ahead. And it was just known as the Trulli train because no one could get past.
That's where you need Death Race. And you've got a rocket launcher on the front. It's like, get out of my way.
Death Race, drop the tombstone.
Yeah, basically. Although you wouldn't want to wipe the guy up behind. I'd just be like chucking everything I could. Fucking way. Saying that, we had a lot of... No, don't, let's not do that.
Okay.
Stop that tangent. I'll be here all week.
So, I'll tell you what, actually, in this race, Espargaro seemed to go against the normal Aprilia pattern of behaviour here, because he did qualify in 14th and race to 8th. So he managed to make up places in the race, which is unusual. That is
quite strange, to be fair.
Yeah.
Where you're thinking, right, normally you qualify well then slip back. We're like, hang on, he's gone up the order.
Yeah, he's done what the Suzukis normally do.
Yeah, which is like really weird. You know, we see when you got the timing tower on the left of your screen, the person in first always has a smiley face until they drop second, where they're like glum as hell, like someone's just slapped them up. You know, a Lace must have been doing high fives all the way up.
Yeah.
Busted wrist. really odd to see, but he just looks good. And like, coming back to like being frustrated with the bike, I would just get in the pits and go, for fuck's sake, sort it out.
Yeah, quite. Well, I feel like that's what we've been saying about Aprilia for the entire time we've been doing this podcast, to be fair. However many seasons that is now, because I can't narrow it down. But a lot of people are saying that about Aprilia. Like, they just need to sort this shit out. Stop with this ridiculous, are we a factory team? Are we a satellite team? Who really knows? Just scrap that. Enter a full factory team or fuck off.
Yeah, basically. Ruben, if you're listening, sort it out, son. You claim I sorted everything else out, sort this shit out.
Yeah, exactly. Get him as a consultant.
Yeah, come on.
Right, Honda.
Yes.
Honda had none of their riders actually finished in a particularly great position, but I feel like they all finished in a reasonable position.
I feel like Honda had, for them, for the way their season's gone this year, one of the best races of the year.
For consistency across all of their riders, I think that's certainly true. I don't think qualifying spells out so much, with Cal qualifying 4th, Nakagami qualified 11th, Alex Marquez 16th, and Stefan Bradl qualified
6th. Where the fuck did he come from?
Yeah, where did that come from? Like, we've not seen a performance like this from Stefan Bradl all year. Like, qualifying on 6th, it was like, I saw it happen, I was watching it. I got quite excited at the fact it's the last race weekend of the year. I'm just going to watch as much as I can. So I watched all of Sunday, I watched most of Saturday, and I watched most of Friday. And it's just seeing Bradl just go round and round and faster, and it's like, where the fuck has this performance come from? He's not going to do this all year. I feel like he couldn't do this when he was a full-time MotoGP rider. So where's this come from?
Yeah, no. He topped a couple of practice sessions as well.
Yeah, it was strange. For a little
bit. And I was just sat there like, why have you done this now, you dick? If you could have done this the whole way through, you know, we'd be looking at you coming back next season.
Well, you know? Yeah, God, can you imagine?
Imagine that. With his microphone, try to commentate while he's going around. Would have been amazing to see. Even like one of those riders you see with a mic. Like you can always tell those people on the road, can't you, who've got the camera on top of the helmet, and they're doing a bit of blogging while they're going along. Because they've got that ridiculous mic sticking around the front. That would be him, like leaning into a corner. Here we are, second gear. Down at second gear.
That would be so good in the middle of a race, can you imagine? And I imagine when you look at him, he strikes me as someone that would, when he gets angry, would get very angry. But it probably takes quite a lot to get him angry. So you can imagine him in the middle of a race, heart's pounding 150 BPM. He's like properly scrapping in the top five. And all the time, just talking you through it very gently. This is it, tipping into the corner. Oh, got Alex Marquez rubbing up my inside. And... anyway, but he did go from 6th to 7th, qualified 6th, raced to 7th.
Bloody good.
Yeah, solid, a really solid weekend from Bradl. And if Marquez isn't back next year, I think he's put himself in a good spot to be able to continue this job of riding the Repsol till we know what the fuck happens with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Did himself a world of good this weekend to continue on. And it was actually nice to see him being competitive.
Definitely.
It really was. I used to love him when he was on the GP grid. He was a good rider then. I've still maintained he's a good rider now. And it was just nice to see him back up the pointy end a little bit.
Yeah.
And mixing it up, you know, didn't need a toe as much in qualifying.
No, and he was just quite happy to do it, wasn't he? Just go out and set the times, happy
just
days.
Just blitz it and look good.
Yeah.
Really good. Exactly. So hopefully, if Mark Marquez doesn't come back at the start of next season, he secured himself that ride until he does.
Definitely. So his teammate in Alex Marquez, like we've said, qualified 16th, raced in 9th. It's been a pretty quiet end of the season for Alex Marquez, all things really. You didn't see much of him in this race. He had those couple of podiums around kind of Le Mans and Aragon. But
he has really just gone off the boil, though.
Yeah.
He's definitely turned it down to a simmer.
Yeah, he really has. So it's a strange one. I don't know. Maybe I just think this gets to a point they all just need a rest.
I think so. It's a bit on and off the track. You know, you think about all the stuff that's going on in the background with COVID. There's a lot to think about. There's far more pressure on people this year with just restrictions, travel restrictions, what's happening at home. You know, there's a lot more going on in your head than just, right, let's get to the race, let's relax. It's, you know, there's restrictions in the paddock to keep yourself safe. There's testing to be done, COVID testing. And it's just, I think everyone just needs to stop. And I think everyone's got to the point where it looks like there was two or three, four riders who could sort out the title. And anyone who wasn't in it was just like, right, let's do our best, but let's just relax it down a bit. And it certainly feels like that's kind of what's happened to Marquez. He's realized that Oliver wants to prove himself. He's signed for LCR next year. He's just like, let's just see this out. Let's be safe and just get the season over with.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think that's probably not a bad way to look at it, especially after he had got quite a big accident knee last week.
He did have a hell of an off. We landed on his coccyx.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess a chilled one. The fact he finished in the points and stuff is okay. And it's probably what his team was saying to him. And I'm sure his family have been saying to him as well. Like you say, it's the end of the season. You're not going to do much else. Like, do you want to battle for Rookie of the Year? It's not a trophy, is it? Yeah, you'll get a BMW, but let's be fair. It's not like the Marquez family are short of a few BMWs.
No, you know, they've got 5 warehouses full of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Go take your pick.
Yeah,
do you want the AM or the PM on the Monday or the Tuesday car? You know, or if we're going out to brunch, there's the brunch set over there.
Yeah, exactly. And there's the nice weather one and the bad weather one.
Yeah. Are we going for one? We're going for 11sies over there?
Yeah.
we should speculate about stuff like that. No, they probably give them all a cherry.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I don't know a lot about their charitable donations, but then maybe that's the way they like it.
I have no idea. I just like to imagine a fleet lined up.
A fleet of Repsol-sponsored BMWs.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
The other two Hondas there, the LCR boys. Cal Crutchlow, obviously we know he's leaving at the end of the year. We know Alex Marquez is taking his ride. Crutchlow, was he injured this weekend? Because I feel like he's been injured every weekend, but I didn't hear much about it if it was this weekend.
I don't know. He's probably carried an injury somewhere.
Oh, I'm sure he's carrying plenty of injuries. I just wonder if there's any fresh ones.
I'm not sure if there's any fresh ones or not. There's always a fresh injury. He's done something.
Yeah, he's tripped over a step or something.
Tripped over a step, opened a window. I don't know. Done something.
That's it.
The boys, you know, it depends whether Skynet's made him some new bits or not. He's got to have them bolted in.
He qualified 4th, finished racing 13th in the end. Actually, it wasn't quite as bad as those results play out. Fighting inside the top 6, inside the top 7 for most of the race. And it was only after he made quite a big error and outbraked himself quite hard while racing with Zarco that he dropped back a shitload of places, ran off the track, dropped back a load, and then couldn't really recover from there, didn't have the time.
No, it was turn one, wasn't it? He ran right on.
He went one side of Zarco, Dovi went the other side of Zarco, and then Dovi made the corner and Cal didn't.
Yeah, I remember seeing it, and I was just like, well, that's his lap done.
Yeah.
When he started qualifying, practicing really well, and he topped the timing sheet again.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, he's going to go out with a bang, this is gonna be awesome.
Yeah.
And like he made that mistake and it was, oh, damn it, K hell. But yeah, really nice scenes in the pit box, you know, smoking everyone out, burnt the back tire out. You couldn't see for like rubber, bloody haze everywhere.
I bet it smelled so bad, man.
It must have been awful. Hot tires, hot bloody track. It must have been, oh,
yeah,
absolutely awful. Because there was a few people that had burnouts as well. And it was nice to see at the end of, I think it was qualifying FP4, Miller and Cal just like doing stoppies together. Just generally just prattling around on the bikes.
Yeah, Miller and Cal, obviously, we know they're really good friends, and we know they went out together for the last qualifying run. Yeah. Had like a fist bump going down pit lane. And then we did see them riding together around for their cool down lap as well. And then the camera cut away from them.
I was really gutted about that.
Yeah.
I was absolutely gutted about that because I'm sure there's some antics going on. Yeah. But one of the photographers did get some cracking pictures like the stoppies.
Okay.
Gareth Ford, I think, and he put them all on his social media, and some of them are cracky. He takes some really good pictures, that guy. I was sort of looking at it, thinking, I'm going to miss this. Just the antics from these two. And I still maintain to this day, they need a slot on BT Sport just to do their little thing.
Like I could see them both being pundits in the future. Like, I could see them doing something.
Yeah, just something, you know, the Cal and Jack show, just a little slot.
Yeah.
In between races or in qualifying, just something, just a little something in there. You know, throw Guy Martin in the mix as well.
Oh God, can you imagine?
It would be mental. Can you imagine Jack trying to get a handle on Guy Martin? What the fuck are you on about, mate?
Yeah, that'd be exactly how it goes. So anyway, Cal's teammate in Takanakagami had a race almost the polar opposite to Cal. Qualified 11th and finished in 5th. So, you know, pretty poor qualifying, pretty good race. Really good scrap. Nakagami was really feisty, actually. It was really fun to see. He had really good fight with Quartararo around lap 10. And it really showed to me how much Portimao allows for the side-by-side racing, because you go into one corner and the guy on the inside's got a massive advantage, but then if the guy on the outside just hangs it out there and like keeps it pinned, when they come to the next corner, the guy who was on the outside is all of a sudden on the inside, and it's just a lot of cool flip-flops, and it's just a really nice track for side-by-side racing.
It's a real good spectacle track. Some riders did say they found it really hard to overtake on, which I found quite interesting because it's such a wide track, and like you say, such a flip-flop track. There seems to be a lot of from the camera angle on the TV, there seems to be a lot of places where there'd be an opportunity to overtake.
Yeah.
But some of them are saying there's not many opportunities, and I'm looking at it thinking, we'll go there.
That's the thing though, isn't it? Because when we're sitting about watching, I'm like, you go in that gap there, you've got loads of room.
And then you look at the timing screen, you realise they're all doing exactly the same time through that sector, and you just can't.
Yeah, that's it. But like, I mean, Portimao, it did seem that there was quite a lot of overtaking. There's a lot of overtaking in the race, and it seemed like it's not like Valencia, is it? Like, there was a lot of action.
There was a lot of action in this race. It was really good. You know, Valencia is very much just a follow the leader. It doesn't throw up great racing.
No.
It doesn't. But it's always the last track on the calendar, and we always look forward to it. So it's what it is.
Yeah.
But I'd quite happily swap Valencia for Portimao, to be honest with you.
Yep. Any day of the week, mate. Any day of the week.
I'd go back there. I'd have my deck chair on top of one of those hills, on the side of the track where you've just got a sudden drop. You know, we saw the riders just catching air. So I'd be there just quite happily mesmerised.
Just chilling.
Yeah, just chilling. Just, you know, probably just off of the verge. They couldn't see me, so I'd just like wave at them as they went past. Be like, whoo. Scared you.
They'd be like, fuck, did you see that guy in the deck chair in the gravel trap?
Good job.
Right, so let's dive into the final factory.
Let's go for it.
KTM. So KTM, I feel like, it's quite a bipolar day, really. They had Mika Kallio qualifying 22nd, racing to 17th. They had Brad Binder qualifying 13th, crashing out early in the race. They had Pol Espargaró qualifying 9th, racing through to 4th. And then they had the one and only Miguel Oliveira qualifying 1st, getting the launch, fastest lap, led every lap, and won the race.
Absolutely awesome.
Boy, just a mind-blowing. I started making actions because I forgot that this was an audio-only podcast.
I was thinking earlier on, actually, you're very animated tonight. I wish we were recording this.
It's because I'm not on the strong spirits tonight. It's just the beer, so it's keeping my head sharp.
I forgot to do that intro bit where we just go like, what is Tim drinking this week?
Yeah, just beer this week. I'm back onto the classic Tennent's lager. Yeah.
I would be drinking, but I can't. We've got a hospital trip early tomorrow, so it's like, damn it.
Yeah, you've got to be the sensible one. As per usual, I'm the one with no responsibilities who's refusing to grow up, so still...
I'm not growing up at all. I have no disillusion of that. You see the amount of toys I've got in this house? They're not mine, mind you, but...
Yeah, exactly. I think you've got an excuse.
Yeah, Brody gets me up at 3:30. Enzo comes out about 6 or 7. He's like, breakfast, Daddy. I'm like, no, we're building blocks, mate.
Make your own fucking breakfast.
Yeah, get in that kitchen. I'll have eggs and bacon.
One day he will go and make that for you.
I would, mate, my chin would hit the floor. Although I did catch him earlier because he's like just got to that right height where he reached the countertop.
Okay.
You put stuff down, and I put some Jammy Dodger biscuits down. For anyone who doesn't know what they are, just the round biscuits with like the heart cut in the middle with jam in it. And I've put them down on the side because I've been at the shop. And when I turn around, they're gone. I was like, shit, Tim's ghost moved. when I went back in the living room, there he is on the sofa, sat next to Sarah. And she's like, where do you get these from? I was like, don't know.
Oh, that's great. Well, he used to get up on the work surface anyway, didn't he? Because he just used to clamber up using the washing machine.
Yes. Yeah, I had to put a stop to that. I had to pull the washing machine out so far that he then couldn't get up. But as he's got bigger, he's now worked out he can actually use the top of the washing machine as like a handhold.
Oh, he's so annoying. Kids are so annoying, man.
Yeah, they are. But at the same time, I kind of want to see what he can do.
You can't have children just to experiment on them, Steve. That's not the point.
I know, but he's at that point in life where, don't get me wrong, he's always been interested, he's always been cracking, but he's now got to that point where he's got his personality, he's starting to explore, and he's your typical 3.5-year-old boy, and he's just like, let's go, Daddy, let's do some stuff.
And there's you just running around behind him like, I'm too old for this shit.
Basically, yeah, I spend my day having like minor heart attacks and just hemorrhaging from somewhere.
Oh, God. Right, let's get back to KTM before we have to think about your hemorrhaging anymore.
Let's do it.
Paul Espargaro then, just a quick one here, like we say, finished the racing fourth. It's a good final result for Paul on the KTM. I think he's probably going to be pretty disappointed to have not won any races this year.
Yeah, that was his last knock-ins, but signed himself off well for his move to Honda.
He certainly did, and from the start of the year where he sort of became the villain.
Absolutely.
I certainly didn't like him very much. I thought he reacted pretty badly to a few situations, but towards the end of the year he's come out and I think actually he's not the villain I thought he was. He's fine. Anyone I'm ever going to be rooting for and properly supporting over a whole season, but likewise he's not going to be someone I'm actively rooting against.
No, if he comes out next year, gets on that Honda and all of a sudden just gels with it and starts blazing off into the distance, then maybe I'll be like, what's happened?
Oh, I mean, I think I would actively root against him if he started to do that.
I think to start with, I'd probably be like, go on, man, go on. Then after a little while, when it started to get a bit samey, I'd be like, nah, just like chill your boots.
When he's done Marquez and done like 10 on the bounce, you're like, fuck's sake, come on.
Yeah, I can't see that happening, but yeah, signed himself off well from KTM. Did a good job for them and has had some good results for him. So we wish him all the best next year getting on that dodgy Honda.
Yeah, and you'd think actually for most factories, seeing a rider leave them who's just finished the final race in fourth, only just missing out on the podium, they'd be quite disappointed. But the fact they're getting Miguel Oliveira next year, I think is quite a decent compensation package as such.
Yeah, that has definitely softened the blow.
It really has. Like we say, he qualified first, won the race. Just unstoppable, man. No one could touch him at all. Thing is, in during free practice and stuff, like he showed flashes of this pace, but it was never like, oh God, Oliveira's going to crush it. And then he just pulled it out of the bag in qualifying. And then fuck, in the race, I couldn't believe the launch was so good off the line that I was convinced he'd done something wrong and was going to get a long lap or he was going to bin it in the first corner.
Yeah. I thought exactly the same thing, must admit. I thought jump start coming your way, mate.
Mm. And then no jump start, didn't bin it in any of the corners, rode it round, looked like an absolute dream.
Yeah, just looked good. And I was rooting for, I did get to the last couple of laps and I sat there with like my hands covering my face. I was like, don't bin it, don't bin it, don't bin it, don't bin it. Every corner I was starting to like just get palpitations. I was like, I really want you to do this, just go and do it.
It's funny because I was getting that the second time I watched when I watched the race this afternoon. So the second time I watched the race, I still was like that. I was still nervous. Like, oh, fuck, don't get it wrong. Don't get it wrong. Don't get it wrong.
You do know, I've got loads of races recorded, watched back, loads of others, like series stuff, the Moto America to watch on the telly. But when you come back to watch a race like that, just recap it. You're just like, you still get the same anxiety and the same feelings you did the first time around, although you know what's going to happen. Even if I get spoiled, like I got spoiled last week, when I come back and I put the telly on, I think, oh, fuck's sake, I know the result. I still get that same excitement.
Yeah.
That I do any race. I was so happy for the boy when he finally got across that line and you saw that great big smile when he took his lid off. And yeah, awesome for the lad. First victory, first home Portuguese home win. Awesome.
Yeah, well, first race in Portugal for however long. He was the first Portuguese Grand Prix winner. It's the first official Portuguese pole position in MotoGP. First MotoGP winner, first Moto2 winner. Like, he is just ticking off the records already. Yeah, isn't he?
He's just like, done that. Oh, you got one more. You done that?
Yeah. I did quite enjoy at the end of the race when he stopped to celebrate and he just got mobbed by marshals. And then in the end, he just had to like, he just started revving and just rode through them to get away because he just couldn't get past.
I like the fact they all had flags as well.
Yeah, and he didn't even take one.
No, he got one from somewhere, one with a stick on it.
Yeah, which he then lost and he just had a stick.
Yeah, it's like, oh shit.
Yeah.
He just got something like road rash when you were a kid on the like Sega. Aha. Got my age here. Anyway, yeah, lost his flag. But like, yeah, all these marshals, when he first stopped, like, poof, look at us. We're great. Flags. He's like, nope, see ya.
Yeah, he just rode off and left them.
I was like, oh, you're not going to take a flag?
No, that tickled me.
That did tickle me as well. If I was those marshals, I'd be like, well, fuck you then.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'd have been like.
I'm not pushing you next year.
Yeah. Oh, dear. But yeah, it was just a really good race weekend, actually. I think it was a very fitting end to the year. The fact that the race was won by a Tech 3 KTM and that, you know, the second place was Franco Morbidelli on a satellite. Yeah, no, sorry. Was Jack Miller on a satellite Ducati. And third place was Franco Morbidelli on the satellite Yamaha. The fact that Quartararo and Vinales were nowhere to be seen. The fact didn't really see much of Dovi through the race. Like, it just summed the season up completely for me.
You put it perfectly. It just, this entire race weekend and race day just summed up how this year has gone.
Yeah, the world championship qualified 20th, or the world champion qualified 20th and didn't finish the race. Like,
yeah, it's just been, it is the perfect description for an absolutely chaotic year.
Yeah.
And what an incredible way to sign off one of the strangest, best, weird seasons that we've ever had.
Yeah.
And I'm bloody gutted it's over. But at the same time, now it's over, I am just now like, right, 2021, let's go.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Like, that's how I feel now. I'm like, right, ready to go for next year. I am looking forward to having a few weeks of just chilling.
I like these few weeks of just chilling. I like the build-up to Christmas. And then as soon as Boxing Day gets here, I'll be like, racing?
Yeah.
And that is literally how it happens for me. You know, I'm sitting on the sofa, a bit fat with food, and my thoughts will then start turning in between Christmas and New Year's to the racing for next year. And I will start sort of looking and thinking, right, I really want some racing now. And that's about how long it takes for me to start really getting in. That's only because I'm a fat git and I really like food, and Christmas is my opportunity to cook a hell of a lot of food.
It's the opportunity to have beer and chocolate for breakfast, mate. That's why I like Christmas.
I can't do that. Beer at breakfast, yes.
I like that it's the chocolate at breakfast that you can't do, but the beer's okay.
I can't. I'm a bit of a chocoholic, and if I start early, I will devour.
That's fine, mate. That's Christmas.
I know it's Christmas, but I've got to save some for the kids. You know, it's not fair.
Okay, that's fair. I'll give you that. Right, shall we just dive into the last bit of the show? And then we're running long today.
I've looked at that. Yeah, we're going to have to put an apology out there somewhere because this is going to be a long one.
That's fine. It is what it is. I'm not sure how many of our listeners ever get to this point anyway. I think they turn us off before this.
Let us know. If you make it this far in, you know, you're on your fifth cup of coffee. You know, you've been trying to finish this show all week on your lunch break. You know, just let us know somewhere, get in touch, you know where to find us. Let us know how many of you guys actually make it to the end of a show before you go shut the fuck up, you two.
Yeah, I mean, I very rarely make it to the end of the show, mate. I've already had three naps, so
I've nodded off a couple of times, I must admit.
Right, let's recap our predictions from last week, Steve.
Let's go for it.
So I thought Morbidelli was going to win, followed by Mir, followed by Rins. You called it a Miller win, followed by Morbidelli, and then Nakagami. You were much closer than me. Closer than me on this one.
I just didn't see Oliveira coming out and doing it last weekend. You know, these guys had looked good, and I was like, right, they're going to do it. And then all of a sudden, this little upstart comes along. I was like, no, watch me.
Yeah.
I would, like, ruin my plans.
I mean, if it wasn't for the KTMs, mate, you'd have got it bang on.
Yeah. I think so. Nakagami, well, yeah, I would have done.
Yeah.
Bloody Oliveira.
Damn it. Oliveira and Paul Espargaro getting in your way there.
Yeah, bastards.
We've got no predictions for next week.
No, my predictions for next week are probably a bit of depression. A bit of probably recapping what has happened. And I'll probably throw a race on just to watch one.
Any race in particular?
I don't know. I'm feeling old school, actually. I had a find the other day. I was in the loft looking for the outside Christmas lights.
Oh, your loft, not the nightclub loft.
No, not in the nightclub loft.
Okay.
I was in my loft looking for Christmas lights, and I found my old box of DVDs, which has got the 2009, 2010 season recap reviews DVDs.
Oh, mate, that's great.
Yes, so they are going on.
Happy days. That's really cool.
I'm well happy with that. What state they're in, I don't know. But
that's all right. They're DVDs, aren't they? They'll probably be okay.
Yeah, they're in the cases. I'll give them a little polish. I'll take them to work and put them across the polisher. and just, yeah, hopefully they'll be all right. I'm awesome. Well looking for
them. Well, we know what you're doing then. I don't know what I'm going to be doing. So, I mean, we'll be this time next week talking, I'm sure, and recording. But we'll work that out during the week.
Sort of topic out.
Yeah, right. We do have a question, Steve.
We do have a question.
Would you like me to read it out? I do have it here in front of me.
If you've got it up already, I was in reaching for the keyboard, but you go for it.
So this comes from Antonio. I'll read the whole email just because he gives us a compliment at the start. And, you know, I like compliments. Hi, Tim and Steve. Thanks for your efforts in putting together the podcast. It's very enjoyable to listen to, even when you do go off on your tangents. Someone appreciates the tangents. Keep up the great work. I'm from Australia, so as you can appreciate, I follow Remy and Jack closely and was really pleased with the way they both finished the season. Mm. I do have a question. A couple of shows back, you mentioned something about around 110%. I think it was related to riders not trying hard enough. Can you explain on your next podcast the 110% rule, as I'm not familiar with it? Thanks and regards, Antonio. So we did sort of misspeak a little bit on this one, didn't we, with the 110% rule. It's actually the 107% rule.
Yeah, we probably should have explained it a little better at the time, but basically it is with qualifying. So you have to qualify within 107% of the fastest time set by any rider that weekend.
Yeah, pretty much. So, for example, if I go out and qualify and do a 1:40 bang on, which is exactly 100 seconds, which is nice for percentages. Steve has to go out and qualify within 1:47. So long as Steve's total time is within 107% of my total time, happy days, we're good.
Yeah, there are a few examples online where riders, like we've had a few wildcard riders in the past. I'm trying to think of one off the top of my head. Who's the French chap who stepped up a few years ago?
He did get through, though, the 107%, didn't he? He was just very slow on the first few days.
Yeah, through FP1 and 2. I can't remember his name now.
He's on the Avintia, wasn't he?
Yeah, but anyway, the chap was quite slow, and everyone was starting to say he shouldn't be there. Mm. And he came through on qualifying day and put in a good time, which actually, I think off the top of my head, if I remember the stats right, it actually meant he qualified at 102.7%. So he's inside of the under 7. He's absolutely fine. He can race.
Yeah, well inside it.
Yeah, but if, like, say you and I rocked up and we had a go and we were 150% outside, there's no way they're going to let us race.
No, not. And that's just for the safety of everyone, because you can't have backmarkers running around like that being lapped a lot. Especially in MotoGP, being lapped is very uncommon. Just because the races aren't long enough.
No.
But if you've got someone that's riding around, you know, half a minute slower than everyone else, then they're going to get lapped very quickly. They're a slow obstacle on the track. They're going to be quite unpredictable, and it's just not safe for anyone.
No. So the 100 and what we were talking about doesn't exactly apply to a race. It just applies to your ability to qualify to get into the race.
Yeah. I can't remember how we brought it up, actually, but we brought it up at some point. But yeah, we misspoke with 110%. It's 107%.
I think it did used to be 110%, but then they changed it. They changed it for Moto3 in 2015.
Oh, okay.
And I believe MotoGP changed in 2013.
Okay.
Don't quote me on 110% before that. If anyone knows, let's know. But it changed to 107%.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And if anyone does know that and wants to let us know, how can they do it, Steve?
They can contact us at weareforthelovermotogp@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Instagram. And we also have a Facebook page, which you can look us up, let us know your thoughts, leave some feedback, like and subscribe.
Steve's now in all the things here.
I'm going forward tonight, big guns. I'll try to think of anything else then.
No, I think you've hit all the buzzwords there, mate. That's enough.
Hello, yeah, that'll do.
So, yeah, thank you for that question, Antonio. And
if anyone else has got any questions, anything you want to talk about, any topics you'd like us to discuss over the winter break, let us know.
Yes, please do. Let's save the fantasy league, Steve. I was going to go through this, but we're running really long. So let's
this
talk
is
about
a long
that
show.
In the next week's show. And we'll let all of our lovely listeners get back to their normal lives and stop listening to us jabbering on. So thank you all very much for listening, guys. We do appreciate it. It's been a fun season. I've really enjoyed speaking to you all. I've really enjoyed speaking with you, Steve. It's been fun.
It's been another cracking year, mate. It's been good to talk to you. We'll be here for the winter.
That's it. And we'll carry on bringing our usual brand of tangents and uninformed opinions to your ears if you would like them. If you don't like them, that's fine. Just stop listening. No one's going to be angry. Except Steve gets angry.
I don't necessarily get angry. I just get a bit upset.
You just get disappointed.
just need a hug every now and again.
Oh, bro. I'll give you a hug next time it's safe to do so. But, you know, being near people is a bit dangerous at the moment.
It is. Quick tangent. Very quick tangent.
Oh.
Went up the city today, take Sarah for a hospital visit, all was well. We thought we'd do, you know, there's a superstore nearby. We went to the range. We thought we'd stop in and we'll get some Christmas decorations. I shit myself. There was not many people in there, but the aisles were thin.
Yeah.
And what they'd done is they'd put a good like arrow system on the floor. But anytime anyone walked past me, it was like you were walking down those aisles with a hospital gown on.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't have got further away from everyone.
Yeah.
You know,
it's nasty, man. Like, I'm finding here, being on Sky, now it's winter. There's no one here. Like, none of the normal. In the summer, there's 100,000 tourists on the island every year. Mm. Every day, 100,000 tourists. There's only 10,000 people that live here. So, like, those numbers are massive. So, as soon as those 100,000 people go, the roads are empty. There's no one about. I mean, I don't go to the supermarket while I'm here. We get Tesco's delivery. So, I'm not seeing anyone at all. But the other day, I had to walk through one of the towns. Was I going to the bank? I was doing something important, post office, bank, one of those things. And there's just people everywhere. And I felt a bit confused and a bit freaked out. I'm like, I don't know how to react around people anymore.
It's a bit weird, isn't it? When you're finally confronted with a situation that puts you in contact with someone and you've got to act normal.
Yeah, that's it.
And you're like,
what's the etiquette? What is normal now?
I had a situation the other day with someone. I'd seen someone for the first time in ages and it was like fist bump. I was like, but he's holding his elbow out. I'm like, well, that's not a fist bump, mate.
Yeah,
and I found the whole thing really hard to process. Yeah. I was like going in for the fist bump. I'm like, elbow bump. All right, yeah, boom, here we go.
Which anyway, is annoying then. As well, elbow bumps, because you've got to get your face even closer than with a fist bump.
As you know, fist bump, I can keep your arm's length. It's like jousting.
Yeah, exactly. That's it.
Anyway,
let's call it. So thank you all very much for listening, guys. We will speak to you very, very soon. It's been a wonderful season, and stick with us.
We'll be here. Thank you all for listening. Take care, guys.
Music is by Andrew Greenwood. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.